Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sports Talk Chicago's Bears Preview Podcast. My name's John Zagluel, owner and operator of the site. Before we get to the Bears and our special guests later on in the show, just a few quick announcements. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram, all at John Zags. Also, if you're looking for somewhere here in the local area to do arts and crafts and also have painting lessons, go to Moochie World, a peculiar place. You can find them at the Tinley Park Down Shopping Center. Their address is 7913 171st Street in Tinley Park. You can call them at 708-247-2100 or visit their website at MoochieWorld.com. Well, finally, after such a long hiatus, football is back. I am so happy and ready, especially for the Bears this season, because I feel that although their record may not speak to it, they can turn a lot of heads this year with their performances on the field. I have two main topics I want to talk about and touch on. One is the QB battle, and yes, I say battle because I don't believe it's Mike Glennon's job for the taking anymore, and also, who is the number one wide receiver after that horrible injury by Cameron Meredith in which he tore his ACL in the last preseason game. Well, let's start things off here by talking about the QB situation between Mike Glennon and Mitchell Trubisky. We all remember in the offseason when the Bears signed Mike Glennon to a 3-year, $45 million contract. I actually wrote an article about it expressing how Glennon isn't horrible when looking at his numbers and comparing them in years past to other quarterbacks. I mean, in one season, he was actually comparable to a performance by Cam Newton. Nevertheless, it seemed that the Bears themselves weren't satisfied as they traded up one spot from their number 3 overall pick to take Mitchell Trubisky at number 2, and the plan is to groom him to become the starting quarterback in the future. So sure, there's been a lot of talk surrounding both guys, who's going to turn out to be the starter, who's going to turn out to be the backup, and there was a lot of pressure on Mitchell Trubisky to overtake Glennon and become the starter. Nevertheless, we fast forward all the way to the first preseason game, and what do you know on the third play, which is just such a Chicago Bear thing to do, Mike Glennon throws a pick six on the third play of the game. So, welcome to Chicago, Mike Glennon. After that happened, and I mean, Twitter went crazy regarding the play, and it just progressively got worse for Glennon that night as he finished 2-for-8 with 20 yards and one interception. They called in Mark Sanchez for a few. He did not do much as far as passing goes. He was more in there just to get some reps. And then Mitchell Trubisky was called upon to make his Chicago Bears preseason debut. Trubisky went 18 of 25, one touchdown, no picks, and 166 passing yards. So everybody jumped to conclusions right away thinking Trubisky's the answer, not Glennon. But we forgot something. Trubisky played against the third team, and Glennon against the first, meaning we didn't really know how to decipher whose performance was, in fact, better. How would Trubisky do against a first-team setting instead of a third-team setting? That question will be found out in the Bears' fourth and final preseason game, but let's analyze the other two games that they played in. Glennon in Game 2 did improve from his horrid Game 1 performance, but it wasn't much better. Against the Cardinals, a team who does have a stingy defense, mind you, Glennon went 13 for 18 for 89 yards with one touchdown and an interception. That interception did come at a bad time, however. He threw it at the 1-yard line in the second quarter and nearly had another on the very next possession. Q Mitchell Trubisky, and he ended up going 6 for 8, 60 yards, and one touchdown, which prompted the conversation about Trubisky and Glennon. And suddenly, it turned into more than just, oh, Trubisky is learning this season no matter how well he does. People started to wonder, hey, could Trubisky overtake Glennon eventually? Glennon had a lot of pressure riding on him in this past game against the Tennessee Titans, but I have to say, he did do well, and I believe that this was the Mike Glennon that the Bears invested in, and that I personally invested in when I wrote his article way back in March. And in that Tennessee game, Glennon went 11 of 18, passed for over 130 yards, and had one touchdown pass. Key stat though, no turnovers, no interceptions, and no fumbles either. You look at the way Glennon played though, what stood out to me was that he was just so accurate. Especially that one pass, and they ran a couple replays of it when I saw it. It was the pass to Cam Meredith, of course, before he got hurt. Meredith was just totally covered. I mean, there was no way you would think that a quarterback would decide to throw it to him because it seemed as if the ball would either get intercepted or certainly batted down to the ground. But in this little pocket, Glennon was able to fit the football perfectly into the hands of Meredith, and he caught it for a first down. Now, although that was just one example, I mean, you could hear it right here, 9 passes, 7 completions, 84 yards in his first drive, and Glennon's second drive, 15 plays, 96 yards, and he capped that off with a touchdown pass to newly acquired Deion Sims, who came over from the Dolphins in a free agency acquisition. So, all in all, it was a great showing for Glennon, and I think he proved to everybody what he is capable of and why he was brought in to at least start Game 1. Obviously, depending on what he does in that game, will determine if Trubisky could get a start later. So, then Trubisky came in, and he now had to live up to what Glennon just did, pretty much solidifying his spot as the number one. But Trubisky did not do bad, although Glennon, of course, was the story of the day. Trubisky went 7 of 9 and 95 yards, including a huge 45-yard touchdown pass to Tanner Gentry. So, although Trubisky's day was not a headline maker, it was a good one, and it also mirrored his performances in the past preseason games, showing that he is capable of consistency. That could also explain why Coach John Fox has decided to let Trubisky start the final preseason game, giving him even more reps with the first team. The Bears need to see how well he can do in a first-team environment, because you've got to admit, at least from the first game, his stats were certainly padded since he was facing a third team pretty much the entire game. We have to see how he does against a first team to determine if he is capable of overtaking Mike Glennon either at this point in the season, or will he have to wait all the way until next year. So, a couple of takeaways from this argument. First, no matter what, Mike Glennon will be starting Game 1 unless, for some reason, he gets hurt in the fourth preseason game. Glennon proved to everybody that he is capable of being an effective NFL quarterback with his performance against the Titans. You don't know how well he's going to do against a team like the Falcons, who recently went to the Super Bowl, did not win, but hey, came pretty close. So, it's going to be a real test, but here's a good thing about Glennon facing the Falcons in his first game as a Bear. If Glennon actually succeeds, that proves that he can beat, or at least compete with, the second best team in the NFL as of last season. If he doesn't succeed, and if he does bad, you won't really know how to judge him, because again, he's facing the second best team from last season. So, it's going to be a learning experience for everybody, and whether the Bears win or lose or not is not that big of a concern because they're facing the Falcons. The only constructive thing that you can take away from Game 1 is if Mike Glennon does good, because then you'll really find out that Mike Glennon will be an effective quarterback, possibly down the road for the Bears. As for Mitchell Trubisky, he just has to wait and make sure to stay sharp and hone his craft, because if Mike Glennon gets hurt, or if he does poorly in, let's say, the first two or three games, they will call on Trubisky to become the new starting quarterback. And he has to take advantage of his opportunity, because as we know in the NFL, the opportunities are not endless. And if you don't take advantage of the one opportunity you receive, you may not receive another one. With those ominous words, we'll move on and talk about the Bears and their wide receiving problem now that Cam Meredith is out for the year with a torn ACL, and I have to say, What a gruesome injury. I don't encourage anyone to go back and watch the video, but if you decide to do it, it looks as if he broke his leg and not his ACL. That's what I thought at first. And that really does spark the debate of how the NFL should maybe reduce the amount of preseason games played by each team, or teams themselves should hold out superstar players so that way they don't get hurt, because Julian Edelman, who is the number one wide receiver for the Patriots, also tore his ACL. However, it was on a non-contact play, but it was still in a preseason game. A lot of injuries happen in preseason games, and it will affect a team's outcome throughout the season if it's a superstar's problem. And as for the case here with Meredith, it's going to extremely affect the Bears, because now, in essence, they really don't have a number one wide receiver, or they don't have someone who is willing to step up and take the reins of that number one wide receiver spot just yet. So, together, let's evaluate the options the Bears have, because there aren't that many viable ones. Now, the Bears, as far as manpower goes, they have 10 wide receivers right now on the roster. As we all know, the way training camp works is that not all these guys will make the team, so we have to go one by one, see who has the best odds at making the team and who is on the chopping block. Now, according to an ESPN writer named Jeff Dickerson, he is predicting that Kevin White is going to become the next number one wide receiver for the Bears, and sure, it makes sense, right? I mean, he was the 2015 seventh overall pick, but he was a first rounder. But hold on a minute, let's think this through. Kevin White has been hurt the past two seasons and has barely saw time on the field. Last year, I remember specifically, he dropped a couple of passes in critical times, and one of them actually occurred against the Giants in a primetime game that was on NBC. So why does Kevin White just get to ascend to the throne of the number one wide receiver? Well, I guess in part because he is a number one pick. He has that pedigree and that status. But it's also because there's really no one else on the Bears roster who has had the experience of being a number one wide receiver, with the exception of Victor Cruz. I'll get to him in a moment because he could be on the chopping block, as crazy as that sounds. And Marcus Wheaton pops up next on our list, a guy who has drawn comparisons to Johnny Knox, if anyone is still familiar with him, a former Bear, a guy who is a deep threat, catches a lot of balls downfield, actually averaged 17 yards per reception as early as 2015. The problem, and the reason why you really haven't been hearing much of his name or seeing him in games, is because he had an appendectomy and now has a fractured left pinky finger that ended up requiring surgery. Hopefully he'll be ready for week one. Wheaton is a good number two, a number three wide receiver who could come in on a shotgun play and go downfield and create space and get open and make catches. Again, 17 yards per catch is no fluke. Doing that with Ben Roethlisberger makes it even more impressive, meaning that whoever he hooks up with here, whether it's Glennon or Trubisky, he'll be able to help them out as far as a deep threat goes. Next up is Kendall Wright, a guy who had a big game this past weekend with Mike Glennon, caught a lot of passes, saw a lot of spacing. And the thing with Kendall Wright is, and I mentioned this, I believe, in my last podcast, is that he and Dowell Logans, who is the Bears' offensive coordinator, have a personal connection. While Logans was coordinator in Tennessee, Wright was playing there. Wright actually caught 94 balls for 1,079 yards with Tennessee back in 2013. He followed that season up with, I believe, a season of just under 1,000 yards. So he had the best years of his career in a Dowell Logans offensive system. Now he's back with Logans here in Chicago, so he will most likely make the team, and his role will also see an expansion with the absence of Cam Meredith. Next up is Deontay Thompson, and he's an interesting one because in our last show, we talked about Thompson and we said he's on the bubble. The only reason he might make it is because of his special teams performances. Well, hold the boat, folks, because there are a couple of reasons now why Deontay Thompson will make the team without question. First of all, we have to respect his 109-yard missed field goal return for a touchdown. I knew right then and there that with that play, and that play alone, there was no way the Bears were going to have to consider cutting him. But now with the loss of Cam Meredith, Thompson will actually receive chances to get on the field, be a receiver, and not be confined to the special teams unit. So there should be no reason why Deontay Thompson could leave, and since he has some blazing speed, he could be used in short passes and as well as long passes trying to beat coverage downfield. Two more guys I want to look at here. One is Tanner Gentry. How's this for a story? He's an undrafted rookie out of Wyoming, and he ended up getting a chance to come to Bears camp, and look at what he did last week with Mitchell Trubisky, catching that big touchdown pass over 40 yards downfield and made a name for himself overnight with that catch. Gentry and Trubisky, though, in camp apparently have already exhibited some chemistry between each other, and obviously it showed right there on the field. So now the question is, will the Bears take Gentry just because of that chemistry and because of his recent success on the field, or will they get rid of him because he's an undrafted rookie out of Wyoming? Which, it's a glaring question to be answered. But again, with the absence of Meredith, everybody on this depth chart is going to move up a slot. So guys who are ranked 6th or 7th are now moving up to the 5th or 6th spot and actually have a chance to make the team. That goes for Gentry. The final guy I want to look at here is Victor Cruz. What a fall from grace for Victor Cruz. I mean, this was a guy who had a 1,500-yard season, who helped the Giants win a Super Bowl with Eli Manning. But it just hasn't clicked here for Cruz in Chicago. He's dropped a couple of passes in preseason games. These aren't even regular season games yet. It seems as if he has not recovered from his injury-torn past, and mixing those two factors together is a cause for concern for the Bears. Dickerson thinks that Cruz will not make the team, and I know that is quite a hasty prediction, but you have to wonder, where are the Bears going to put him? There are a lot of guys who are overperforming, who are taking over Cruz's spot, per se. Guys like Gentry, guys like Thompson, who weren't considered big-time four or five guys, but now are. And Cruz has not progressed like them, which is why he has just dropped lower and lower on the depth chart. Cruz has to have a strong showing in game four of the preseason, or else I can say this with confidence, he will not be on the Bears come opening day. And with that, it's time for our special guest. He has rushed for over 10,000 yards in the NFL, the majority of which have come with the Bears and the Jets. He helped guide the Bears in their offensive attack during their 2006 Super Bowl run and made a Pro Bowl team in 2008. Following his playing days, he has pursued acting, even receiving a part in the Hollywood hit Straight Outta Compton. Today, he is the CEO of CastStar, an app that helps young actors and actresses get discovered. Please welcome Thomas Jones to the show. Thomas, how are you doing today? And thank you for being here on the show.
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
So, first off, I'd like to talk about some upcoming Bears football, since their first game is just 1 week away. So, I'm sure you are aware of the quarterback situation right now and the ongoing battle between Mike Glennon and Mitchell Trubisky. Who do you think deserves to start week one? And also, what makes a good quarterback in your eyes? I mean, you did get to play with Brett Favre in New York at the end of his career.
You know what? I'm not sure. I know the young kid Trubisky has looked well in preseason. And I haven't followed too much football. So I've been just busy working on a TV show. So I haven't really had much access to the TV. But, you know, just from what I've seen on social media, you know, I know a lot of people are excited about him and his talents. I guess, you know, as a general manager or a coach, you know, you should go with the guy that has the hot hand going into this bigger season. I'm not sure if Glennon has really proven himself that much over the course of his career to be this the cut and dry starter. I mean, what makes a good quarterback is just confidence. you know, understanding the playbook, understanding what everyone else is supposed to do as well as you understand what you're supposed to do. Those things stick out. And, you know, if Trubisky has those type of qualities and he's displayed those type of qualities, you know, I think it's a no-brainer for him to be the starter.
So let's go back to your team with the Bears back in 06 when you guys made it to the Super Bowl. What did you guys have that was so special that allowed you to keep going and be the successful team that you guys were? What's that special quality that you guys had that you were touching on regarding the quarterback situation now?
Well, as far as the team, we just had great chemistry. You know, I think we had a nice mixture of veteran players and younger players. And, you know, when you have veteran guys that are experienced and, you know, you're able to bring all these guys together and they're able to work cohesively and on offense and defense like we have, I mean, the young players just follow suit. You know, they, it's almost like you have coaches, but, you know, the coaches are just kind of there, just to fill spaces. I mean, you know, we pretty much policed ourselves as a team, the veterans did. We had ourselves to a very, very high standard. We knew where we were playing. We understood the history and the mystique of that organization and that city. And we knew, you know, that, you know, we need to go out there and play as hard as we can, try to bring a championship back to the city. So, you know, when you have all those elements combined, it's, you know, it's a pretty special opportunity that you have and that you can create for yourself, which is what you're able to do.
And speaking of that Super Bowl 41 performance, I had a couple of questions about that. I watched that game in its entirety. It was such a great game. I thought you guys were going to win it out of the gate. You guys jumped to a 14-6 lead. Something I have to ask has to do with your 52-yard run in Super Bowl 41. I mean, first the Hester return, then your unbelievable run downfield. Did you feel that you guys were going to win it all? What happened after you guys got that 8-point lead?
I honestly thought that, you know, this was going to be, it was going to be a blowout. I just felt that way. The energy was incredible. You know, Devin obviously took the opening kickoff back, and then I was able to break off a long run, and we capitalized and scored. I think we just had way too many turnovers. We had way too many turnovers. We just kept giving them life. And, you know, Peyton Manning is one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. And, you know, I think the rain kind of neutralized the game. And, you know, we just turned the ball over way too many times. I think we had 5 or 6 turnovers. You have 5 or 6 turnovers and still lose by 8 points. You know, honestly, if you have 5 or 6 turnovers in a game like that, one interception or a touchdown, it should be a blowout. We still were driving at the end, down by, I think, 5 or something like that. I mean, we were 3 or whatever we were down by. I don't know. But, I don't know. It haunts me every day. It haunts me every year the playoffs come. So it's kind of like a girlfriend that you never got over, man. It's tough. I mean, especially when you go there with the Bears. I mean, you go to the Super Bowl with the Bears. You know, it's like, I mean, if you go to the Super Bowl with any team, it's the Bears. You know, you want to win for the Bears. You want to have that parade, you know, the NFC Championship game, the night before the NFC Championship game in our hotel rooms, they had a channel, designated where they just played the 85 Bears Championship Parade in Michigan Avenue. Huh. And it was just looped over and over. So, you know, the night before I went to sleep for the NFC Championship game against the Saints, I just left the TV on and left it on that channel. It was very, very disappointing to not win. Very disappointing. No, I mean, we did the best we could, and unfortunately, the team, I think, got broke up the next year, and I think a lot of people were disappointed in that sort of situation as well. I think we missed out on an opportunity to go back. I think we had a very, very special team, and those kind of teams don't come around too often.
In the two games now leading up to that Super Bowl, you performed extremely well, though. I mean, you really carried your weight. You helped the Bears get to where they ended up being. You scored 2 touchdowns against Seattle in the divisional game. You rushed for 123 yards against the Saints in the NFC Championship game. Side note, that is a Bears postseason record. How were you able to do so well in such critical games?
I was just motivated from the year before. You know, my career started, and also my career from the beginning, started up rocky in Arizona. You know, I just went into a situation that was just tough to go to an organization that, you know, at the time, you know, just didn't seem like they really cared too much about winning. I mean, and plus, you know, it was just very hard because I was young, I was so far away from home. You know, we weren't really that good on defense. We weren't really that good on our offensive line. You know, I mean, we had great players, but we just didn't have the right chemistry. And it was tough. You know, it was very tough. We were in the NFC East. You know, we were on Pacific Time. We're in the Eastern Division, so we have to fly to the East Coast 3 times a year. I mean, it was just a disaster. So I never retasted success up until that point. And the year before that, you know, my first year in Chicago, we were 5-11. And then the next year was my first time going to the playoffs in 05. And we had a bye week, and we lost to Carolina, a team that we had already beaten in the regular season. So that next year was just like, listen, we're going to get through the new game. You know, we're not taking anyone lightly. We're not going to drop the ball. And I was super motivated going to those playoffs. Super motivated. I was like, we're not losing this game. We're not losing at home. Got two home games. No. We're going to win these two. You know, the Super Bowl, we'll see what happens when we get there, but we're not going to lose these two games at home. And all week I was just really, really motivated and really just focused. I stayed at the facility till 9, 10 o'clock at night watching film, staying in the cold tub, even though it was cold outside, I was still staying in the cold tub, keeping my legs fresh. And I just really wanted it. You don't get to those positions too many times in your life or in your career. You know, in your career, you're like, you don't get to play in the NFC Championship or the divisional game at Bear State, Chicago Stadium, Soldier Field. It's just a football player's dream, man. And I was glad I did it before.
Now, with such a great career, I've come across some talk online that has you eventually getting elected into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. You certainly have the numbers. You have the playoff experience. So what are your thoughts on the Hall of Fame and your chances?
Hey, you know, listen, the Hall of Fame is in Canton is the ultimate honor, individual award, you know, for your career. And I was super fortunate. I thank everybody that had a part in my career, whether it was the good situations or the bad situations. 12 years of playing in the NFL and playing on 5 different teams and 5 different cities, and I played in almost every stadium. I look back on my career, I think I had 100 yards on every team except for maybe 3 or 4. The further away I get from my career each year after I played, it gets more and more incredible. It's like, wow, I can't even believe that happened. It's like a dream. So as far as the Pro Football Hall of Fame, I would obviously love to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But, you know, a lot of those things are up in the air. You know, it's there's a lot of other people that have to make those decisions, and there's a lot of factors that go in. I think if I was able to play at one team more consistently, I think it would have helped my chances. You know, for example, if I could have stayed in Chicago for 6 or 7 years, maybe if I would have signed a new deal with Chicago or restructured my contract instead of getting traded to the Jets, and I was able to stay there for maybe 7, 8 years, or, you know, a situation like that, I think it would have helped. But it's just weird because I was just an anomaly. I went to play on 5 different teams, but my numbers are the same as guys that played on one team for their whole career. So I was kind of all over the place. But I would love to be in Canton. I would love to just be nominated. Just to be nominated would be an incredible honor. But if not, I wouldn't change anything. I'm so grateful I had a chance to play for all the teams I played for. Super grateful I had a chance to play for the Chicago Bears and the guys that I've met there. These are lifelong friends. Even, you know, the management, Jerry Angelo, Lovey Smith, those guys believed in me. They brought me there in 2004 to be their starter. And obviously things got a little rocky. But I'm grateful to those guys, too. I mean, those guys are a huge part of my career as well. So we'll see what happens.
And I was going to ask you if you regret anything as far as what happened with the Bears, you know, that year in which you ended up getting traded to the Jets. Do you wish, you know, if you got a chance, if you got a time machine to go back and, you know, reflect on what would have been, would you have found a way to stay with the Bears? Or, I mean, bring us more inside that situation. What happened? You know, are you regretful of leaving the Bears at that time? Just bring us inside that situation, if you don't mind.
No, of course. I finally got a place where I fit in. You know, I loved it at Tampa. Tampa was incredible, man. I mean, they traded for me. They gave me the chance to play. You know, they gave me a fair shake. You know, I was able to earn a starting job by the end of the year. And, you know, they told me to leave. I didn't want to leave Tampa because it was finally a place where I loved starting to love football again. And I really have built a great relationship with John Gruden and my teammates there. But, you know, I'm just on the business end, it just made more sense to Chicago, to play to Chicago. And it was a team that I could go and play for that needed me immediately. And after Peyton played there, there was just so much there. So when I found my deal there, you know, I was planning for that place to be my home the next however long I played. And then, of course, you know, they drafted Teddy Benson the next year. And it just made things a little bit awkward because, you know, from a business perspective, they gave him a lot of money. And I understood, okay, if you draft a guy that high, you have to see what he can do. But, you know, I'm like, well, this is my team now. You know, obviously last year we were 5-11. You know, I had almost 1,000 yards with, you know, minimal, help on offense. You know, I mean, we had pretty much a makeshift line at that time. A lot of guys were injured. You know, defense guys were injured. We went through about 4 or 5 quarterbacks, you know, and I was still working hard. And so it was just like, I don't know, it was just such an awkward situation. And then the next year, you know, I had 1,300 yards in 05, we went to the playoffs, and then the next season, clearly, you know, we went to the Super Bowl and had 1,200 yards and all that stuff. I tried to work something out with those guys, with Jerry and Angelo, before the 2006 season. I just said, hey, listen, you know, I've been here for 2 years, I put work in, you know, obviously I know you drafted Cedric Benson, and I get it, but help me, you know, work with me, man, you know, I mean, I'm putting the work in, you know, I'm playing on third downs, you know, I'm every day I'm back, you know, I'm in a pass protection, I'm in a short yardage, I'm in a goal line. I'm doing what a starter in this league's doing. I think I've proven my worth to the team. But it just couldn't work. And then before the season, you know, it was a whole off-season program issue. I didn't come to the off-season program, which, you know, I was upset because I felt like, you know, listen, guys, man, you know, I love this team, I love this city, I love these fans. But you guys aren't willing to work with me, you know, and if you guys want to skip the football part and stick to business, then let's do the business. So I didn't come to the offseason program. I ended up coming to training camp, and hurting my hamstring, and then said, ended up playing in preseason. And as I was getting better, he ended up getting hurt. And, you know, and then we worked during the season. You know, I don't think he wanted to be a starter, which I completely understood, you know, but, you know, I'm a veteran and this is my team. This is my offense. I was here when we were 5-11, you know, so there is no just me moving to the side. And then at the end of the season, you know, Jerry, we tried to work out a deal with Jerry. And, you know, and I understood what his stance, you know, there was never any hard feelings because in the beginning of the season, me and Jerry had a really good conversation and Lovey. And they said to me, listen, Thomas, you know, we love you here. We know what you mean to that team. Obviously it's a tough situation with the contract situation with you and with Cedric here. But, you know, let's just have a great season, be a great teammate, just lead that team. And we'll, at the end of the season, we'll either restructure your contract or we'll figure something out. And I said, okay, we shook on it. And then we had a great season, went to the Super Bowl. And then right after the season, you know, of course, you know, I wanted to figure out what we were going to do on a business end because I had money left on my deal. And it just seemed as if Jerry kind of wanted to renege, and so it was just a really, really weird situation for me. I mean, I did not want to leave Chicago. I mean, anybody in their right mind would not want to leave that situation. I just left the Super Bowl. And, you know, what was so crazy is that, you know, I was the only player that didn't get to go to pick up my NFC Championship ring at the facility. So, you know, everyone else, when they received the NFC Championship rings, I was the only one that wasn't there. So after the Super Bowl, I never went back to the facility again. They shipped me all my stuff, my cleats, everything that was in my locker to New York. So it was sad because I didn't really get a chance to even really say goodbye, you know, to anybody, to the equipment guys, to the trainers, to management, front office guys, my teammates. You know, I've never got a chance to say goodbye to those guys, man. You know, so it was, I don't know, man. It was a pretty tough situation because, obviously I wanted to be taken care of from a contract perspective. But when you've done something so special with a group of guys that you become brothers and family with, you're just kind of torn in between the middle. Like I said, I think I'm the first running back in NFL history to be traded after having 100 yards in the Super Bowl. There's so much weird stuff that went on with that situation. I can't even put my finger on it. I just know that the NFL definitely, unfortunately, is business first. And if anyone tells you otherwise, they're lying.
It's quite a story, Thomas, and I know it's honestly sad. It really is, because we all loved you here in Chicago. You produced so well for us, and it turns out you produced even better when you went over to New York as well. So at least from a career standpoint, you know, nothing was hindered in any way. You did pretty well for yourself when you went to New York and even Kansas City towards the end of your career. So it is odd how the whole situation played out, and you ended up leaving, you know, by force, as if it's quite sad.
Yeah, it is. Because I was coming into my own as a running back at that time as well. You know, I mean, I had a great coach and Tim Spencer. We had built an incredible relationship. The running backs, Adrian Peterson and Jason McKean, they were my younger brothers. These guys, we worked so hard and they were so dedicated. And you know, Cedric was a good kid. You know, he came in, he was determined, and he wanted to, and I understood his position. I was the 7th pick in the draft. I just think that when he came in, he expected the job just to be kind of handed to him because of how highly he was drafted. And I don't think he realized who I was as a player or what I had been through in my career. I mean, I went from being the 7th pick in the draft, and a starter, you know, my rookie year, my first game, I was a starter, to going to Tampa and playing every single special team. And then, you know, having to climb back up, I fell all the way back down. You know, I was called a bust, all these things. And then I had to climb my way back up, so I was not giving that up for anything or to anybody. And it's sad because, you know, I think we could have worked really well together if the situation or circumstances were different, but unfortunately they weren't. I see the Bears, and I have, you know, I go home and I see my Super Bowl jersey and, you know, the pictures, and I have a big picture of me next to Walter Payton in our uniforms, you know, a picture of him in his uniform, a picture of me in my uniform that's on my wall, my house, in my office. And I have this Wheaties box that he was on the cover of, you know, in my office, in the 80s. And it's like, you know, it's like you're always, when they say once a bear, always a bear. I mean, that's the truth. You know, that experience, man, is just so crazy. It's just, it's like Soldier Field and putting on the helmet and man, just Chicago. It's just a special city, man. It's just a super special city, man. It really is. Chicago is a very, and it was, that was a very special time in my life from 2004 to 2006, 2007. It's like a dream. Really, it's like a dream, man. I mean, there are dream jobs that people want to have. Going for the Bears is a dream job, man. It's a dream job. Anyone that played for the Bears will tell you that. I mean, go to the stadium. You know, we were at one point, we were 3-7 or 3-8 or something like that in 2004. Fans still there. We played the Falcons in 2005. I think it was -11 with the wind chill or something like that. Freezing cold. Fans still there. Someone had their shirts off. I mean, to have that kind of dedication. And everywhere I go, I live in Hollywood. I live right in the middle of Hollywood. And there's so many Bears fans in L.A. and so many Bears fans in Hollywood, just in the industry. And I'll have an audition, and I'll see a Bears mug on the casting director's desk, or I'll have a general meeting with an executive producer or someone from a studio, and they'll have a Bears helmet or football sign in their office. It's crazy, man. The Bears are global.
Well, speaking of Hollywood, I wanted to shift gears, talk about your career now. You've chosen to pursue acting, and you actually got to pose as Suge Knight's bodyguard in Straight Outta Compton. Since you were a part of such a successful movie, I would love to hear more about your experience on set and what it was like to actually be in a box office hit.
It was a unique experience. I mean, to be honest, I've only been acting for the last 3 years, and I kind of got pushed into it. I worked on this project in Miami. I have a production company that I was working with artists, and I added a films division. And so a guy I was working with introduced this other project in Miami. So, you know, it was something that I could produce, and I had a little role in, and I played next to this guy named Clifton Powell, who's a really big actor, an incredible actor. And I had some scenes with him early, and he was like, hey, you know, you're talented, man. You know what, you should pursue the acting. It's like, no, man, you know, I'm not interested in acting. I'm just doing this because I retired and I don't really have much to do right now. And I was, you know, he's like, no, you really need to push this. You need to really do it. He just kept pushing and pushing. So I got an agent. And they would send me auditions in L.A., and I did not want to be in L.A. I lived in Miami. I did not want to go to L.A., so a lot of auditions, I just wouldn't go. And I finally went to one, and it was an episode of Shameless, which I'd never seen before. And the first time I went in, I booked a role, and it was a non-speaking role, but it was just cool to be around. I got to work with William H. Macy, and then we shot a scene in Chicago.
Huh.
And it was cool because a lot of the crew, they were Bears fans, so more of the crew knew who I was than him.
That's
and he's a fan too. So it was like, it's crazy, but you know, and then that's how I got into the industry. And then the Straight Outta Compton thing was just a role that popped up late in the production. They had already been filming and that role popped up, and the role, it said, the description was large man. Like, there was no name or anything. And so my agent said, hey, you know, this might be a role for you, you know? I was like, okay, cool, you know, go check it out. So it was only three lines, and I walked in for the audition. There was like 50 guys in there, and they're huge. Most of the guys are, because I've lost probably about 25 pounds since I retired for acting. And there's some humongous guys in there. So I went in and was like, okay, here we go. There's three lines. Let me just say these three lines, and boom. So I did my thing, left, went to go eat lunch. And honestly, I did not think anything else about it. I was like, and I didn't know the movie was going to be that big. I didn't know the budget. I didn't know anything. It was just a small role. My agent called me the next day and said, Thomas, my God, you booked it. I'm like, booked what? He's like, the role for that you read for, Straight Outta Compton. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. He's like, yeah, so you need to be in Calabasas to shoot at 6 tomorrow. I said, okay, cool. So I go out there. I mean, it was just an incredible setup. And you know what's so crazy is that a lot of those guys, like Paul Giamatti, they had wigs on because obviously it was from the 80s. And so I didn't even recognize Paul. And I had the scene with him. I did not recognize him until after we shot the scene. And Paul Giamatti, myself, and F. Gary Gray, we were sitting behind the camera. And Paul started talking to me about football. And F. Gary Gray didn't even know I was a football player, the director. He had no idea until we started talking. He's like, you play for the Bears. I was like, yeah, because my actor's name is Thomas Q. Jones. So I added my middle initials. So he didn't know that I was the same guy. Because he's the one that he saw the auditioning, and he picked me and he said, man, this guy right here, something about this guy, he's intense. I like him. That's how I ended up getting the role out of everyone. So it was really cool that we all had a chance to kind of talk about football and acting. And I'm sitting there listening to you guys talk about The Negotiator, because F. Gary Gray directed The Negotiator, Paul Giamatti was in that. I'm like, wow, I'm really in Hollywood. Like, it was really, really cool experience. And then when it came out, well, that was a whole other story. It's like, whoa, this thing just blew up. So the whole experience was, it was really cool. I went to the premiere, you know, it was exciting to see my scene come up, because a lot of times when you have small scenes in big movies like that, they cut some of those scenes out because they need to get the movie down time-wise. They don't want it to be too long. So a lot of the people's scenes, unfortunately, were cut out. But mine made the cut. So it was a lot of fun, man. Really, really a lot of fun. And it gave me a lot of exposure because a lot of people saw the movie, so it was cool.
So through your acting experience, you have also created an app dedicated to helping young actors and actresses receive their first big break. Can you tell us more about the CastStar app and its function within the acting world?
Okay, well, yeah, you know, when I retired, I really was kind of like, what am I going to do now? Because I was working with artists, but the thing about working with other people, when you're used to working for you, you're not working for yourself, but relying on your own work ethic, you know, it's kind of, you have to, you're put in between a rock and a hard place, because you may want someone else to be successful, but you have to wait for them to figure out what they want, you know. And I was used to being, you know, my own vehicle for success. So no matter what happened, I knew I was going to train hard all week. I was going to be in the cold tub. I was going to know the defense. I was going to be ready to play. And with the music industry, you know, especially with artists, you know, it's very, very unpredictable. So, you know, with that being said, you know, I decided to kind of venture out and take on some new projects, things that I was interested in, but I just didn't know much about. And acting was one of them, and technology was another one. And so I saw the Social Network movie about Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook, and I got obsessed with technology. I watched the movie like 10 times, and it was just obsessed with it. And that's when I created the my mobile app CatStar and my technology company CatStar Applications Inc. And basically the app, it's an app for actors, for talent to connect with each other. So for example, say you have a project that you need a dancer for or you need an actor for. You would download the app for free and you would post what you're looking for. Hey, actor, blah, 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 description. This is where it is. This is blah, blah, blah. Okay. I'm talent, so I can see that on the app. And if I like that opportunity and I want you to see me, I can submit to it. So once I submit to that opportunity, then you get a notification from me. And then if you get a chance to look at my portfolio, which will be my either my acting reel, my, all my information, my bio, any videos I want you to see. And then if you like what you see, then you can message me directly and say, hey, you know what, I like what I saw, can we connect? So it's, you know, what I wanted to do once I got into the acting industry and I started to realize how hard it was and so many people were just infatuated with it and their dream is to become an actor or a dancer or whatever it is. Well, I just wanted to do something that could help their dreams come happen a little quicker. And I think now the world's obviously speeding up. Sometimes it's a good thing, sometimes it's a bad thing, but, you know, with Uber and Airbnb and all these other platforms, you know, I think that I thought this would be a really good way for talent to kind of connect with people that are looking for them as well. So that's the app.
Yeah, awesome idea. That's why when I saw it on your Twitter profile, I was like, wow, you know, I wanted to look into this more. And it's a really clever idea. Seriously, it's really cool.
Thank you. Thank you. We're relaunching it actually right now. We're revamping it, just tweaking a couple of things and making it a lot more efficient. And it'll be available in October. On iPhone only in October. So, you know, it's been a great ride. I met some great people. I met some incredible people. I've learned so much. Actually, our company was one of 12 companies to be accepted to this, prestigious event by Google. It's called the Google for Entrepreneurs event, last October in Durham, North Carolina. So I think there were about 172 startup companies that, tech startups that submitted and only 12 were selected and we were one of them.
Wow.
Which was great. Yeah, they flew us to Durham, put us up for a week. It was really cool. There were so many different tech startup companies, hedge fund companies, venture capitalists. I mean, you know, so I'm pretty deep into acting and I'm deep into tech and I'm super happy, man. You know, that's why I don't really have much time to watch the games on TV, but you know, with social media, I get to see what's going on as well.
So, final question, Thomas. It's been quite an interview. I just wanted to touch on your journey from Virginia to the NFL. I was looking into your story, researching questions before you came on the show. I think it's an incredible story, and I'd be honored to hear it from you.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm from the coal mines of Virginia, super small town. Big Stone Gap, Virginia, is where I went to school. Appalachia, Virginia, they're towns that are maybe 5 minutes apart. It's in the very, very bottom of Virginia. I mean, towards Kentucky. It's 30 minutes from Kentucky and from Tennessee state line. So we're at the very, very bottom of the state. My mom and my father, both were coal miners. My mother worked in the coal mines for 19 years. My father worked in the coal mines for 1 year and he was laid off. So he couldn't get back in. So my football number in the NFL was number 20 for the combined number of years that they worked in the coal mine. And so, you know, I was fortunate enough to have a really good high school career, and I was rated really high coming out of high school as a running back. I was the second rated running back in the country. I chose to go to Virginia over Notre Dame. Those are the two schools because Virginia was a little bit closer, and my mother and father could come see me play. Notre Dame was about 11, 12 hours away. And also, you know, it was in-state. You know, and it was weird that year. There were a lot of running backs that came out that were pretty highly rated. Edgerrin James came out the year I did. Ron Dane came out the same year that I did. A lot of us all came out the same year in high school. Went to Virginia, played there for 4 years. Was fortunate enough to be a two-time All-ACC player. And then in my senior year, I was a consensus All-American, first team. And that's where I actually met Brian Urlacher. I met Brian Urlacher at the College Football Awards, and then we were both Walter Kent Foundation All-Americans. So I knew Brian Urlacher in college. And so it was weird, you know, when we were drafted, I was the seventh pick, and he was the ninth pick. So I've known Lack for years. And then, you know, I was obviously, you know, I was able to be drafted in the seventh pick in the draft of the Arizona Cardinals. Played for Arizona for 3 years. Had a really tough time out there. Just, you know, just wasn't the right fit. Was traded to Tampa Bay. Started to kind of get my legs back and start to really get my groove back as far as just loving the game and enjoying the game again. And then I went to the Chicago Bears, and that's what changed my whole career. Played there for 3 years and traded to the Jets. Went to a team that was really, we had a very, very young team. So my first year there in 07, we were 4-12. The next year, we ended up getting it together, and we were 9-7, barely missed the playoffs. And then in 2009, we went all the way to the AFC Championship game, got beat by Peyton Manning again for the second time. And then I was released. Business popped up again. You know, they owed me a lot of money. Roster bonus March 3rd. They released me March 2nd after, you know, I pretty much had the best season of my career, 1,402 yards and 14 touchdowns. And I signed with the Chiefs in 2010, who were 4-12 the year before, teamed up with Jamal Charles, and we almost became, I think, the third or fourth running back to have 1,000 yards in the same season. He had over 1,400, and I had close to 900. And then my last year, we went to the playoffs, lost in the first round against Baltimore. In my last year, we played against a tough, tough schedule that year, and Jamal Charles went down. We had quarterbacks go down. And unfortunately, it wasn't one of my best seasons, my last season, but, you know, we were 7-9. And I think about that last season was it just really just, it was a culmination of everything. You know, those guys, I mean, I had truly become the grandfather on that team. And we went through so much. That's one of the seasons I appreciate the most. We were 7-9, but I appreciate that season so much because it forced me to really dig deep within myself and to leave something with those guys because I knew we weren't going to go to the playoffs. We were kind of close towards the end, but I knew that these young guys needed everything that I had athletically, mentally, my experience. And I think I was more proud of myself that season than any other season because I truly took all those young players under my wing. And I really tried to groom them and get them ready for success. And when I left, I think the next year or two, they ended up turning around and going to the playoffs. And so, I mean, like I said, I just had an incredible journey, man, in the NFL. I just turned 39 a couple of weeks ago. It was a dream, man. It really was a dream. I played football. I started playing at 7. I retired at 33. And you know what? Since I've retired, I haven't been to one football game. I haven't even been to a stadium. I haven't even smelled the grass of a football field since I retired. And I think the first time I do, it'll probably be a little emotional, man, you know, because when I left the game, I wanted to just leave and just come back to reality. And I think I've been away for so long now that, you know, I haven't really thought too much about it besides doing interviews like this and, you know, seeing certain things on social media, maybe a game or two on TV. But I think, you know, I'm kind of dreading, you know, the Jets, and a lot of people have reached out to me to want me to come back and be an honorary captain of games. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, I'm pretty much finished with football. But a lot of it, too, is I'm kind of scared, man, you know, because, you know, if you go back, I was such a passionate person and a passionate player, and I loved the game so much that I'm kind of scared to go back because I might go back and I might want to play again. You know, you might want to say, you know, I think Tommy Harris is trying to come out of retirement, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand completely why, because it's addicting, man. It really is addicting. If you're not playing for the money, it's just that it's very hard to simulate the NFL environment, from the locker room to the intensity on the field to the brotherhood. You're literally at war with your brothers. And you don't, that's something that you don't lose those instincts. They just don't go away. They stay. And that's why I like being an actor, because I'm able to take all of those raw emotions and all those instincts, and I'm able to put those things into a character. And when you're able to channel all that energy and all that emotion into a character, your performance is going to show. going to stand out. Even in Straight Outta Compton, for example, I had three lines, but I was looking at Paul Giamatti like he was a linebacker for Green Bay. So, you know, I had to be intense. I had to be menacing. And so in my mind, I'm literally thinking, like, how would I be in pregame if we're coming out, if we're playing at Lambeau and I'm coming out of the tunnel? What would be my mindset? You know, I would go into a totally different mental space. And that's kind of what acting is. You know, it's an escape. Just like football, it's an escape. So it's pretty cool, man. I don't know. I just had a great journey. I'm so thankful I had a chance to play that long. I'm so thankful I had a chance to play for the Bears and experience that. I want to thank all the Bears fans, even everyone that follows me on Twitter and social media that follows what I'm doing now, all the support. I posted a picture today, a throwback Thursday picture, and so many Bears fans just pop up on my feed. And, I'm really grateful and thankful that I was able to contribute to that team. And, yeah, man, you always have a Bears fan in me, regardless of whatever their situation is. They could be 0-16 or 16-0, and I'm always going to be a Bears fan.
Well, Thomas, thank you so much for being here on the show. It was such a pleasure to talk to you, and congratulations on your new endeavors, both in acting and in technology. Thank you again.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the interview, man, and I wish you all the best. I hope you guys have a great season this year. I hope you guys figured out with the quarterback situation too, man, but I'm sure you guys will. I mean, young running back you guys have is tough, man. I'm a big fan of his too. So, yeah, man, I wish you guys the best. I wish the Bears the best this season.
Thank you so much, Thomas.
You got it.
And once again, I'd just like to give a special thank you to Thomas Jones for joining me on the show today. It was such a memorable interview for me as I got to talk to Jones about so many aspects of his career, his off-the-field life. It really was an honor to have him on, and I hope he decides to come out again down the line. Thank you all for listening to today's show. Go Bears! The season starts September 8th as they take on the Atlanta Falcons. Just a few quick announcements as we end the show today. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at John Zags. Hit me up personally on Instagram, Google+, and LinkedIn, all at John Zags, and follow the website Twitter at Shy Talk Sports. Thank you all for listening to today's show, and as always, go Bears!